The Drowsy Chaperone is a musical within a comedy. It's a farcical parody of musical comedies from the 1920s, with many characters, misunderstandings, and relationships. It's told through the framework of an older man talking about his favorite classic musical, The Drowsy Chaperone, as that musical plays out on stage. With tons of laughs, skewered tropes, and blurring the fourth wall, this 2006 musical is beloved by many comedy and musical fans, including my guest today, comedian Will Nicholson. I hope you enjoy our conversation about The Drowsy Chaperone. Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing? Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for coming out. What are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about my favorite musical, The Drowsy Chaperone. I feel like I said that weird. It's okay. I like it. Drowsy Chaperone.
We're just going to do the whole podcast is we're going to be saying the name of the show in different accents.
Oh, excellent. What's your favorite accent?
I can't do any accents.
Oh, let me hear an Irish, The Drowsy Chaperone.
No.
Ah, oh, so close, so close.
This is maybe the fastest tangent this show has ever gotten, but a very brief tangent is I went to a New Year's Eve party with a lot of our mutual friends, and we were playing the game. Oh, I forget the name of this game, but it's basically Cards Against Humanity, but with accents.
Okay.
And I was like everybody was an actor except for me. And so I was just like, come on. And right. Then our British friend made us all do a British accent around the circle. And we're like, this is cruel and unusual.
That is cruel and unusual. Sorry about your British friend torturing you.
Anyway, so we're not actually doing that. But why did you pick The Drowsy Chaperone?
So The Drowsy Chaperone, I grew up, a little bit of backstory on me in this show. I grew up in Little Rock, Arkansas. And my uncle and my aunt and my cousins, all of them on my mom's side of the family, have been involved in theater just for a long time. My uncle's done it since he was a kid. And he, when I was about probably 13, 14, was in a production of The Drowsy Chaperone in Dallas, where they all live. So we piled in the car and drove down to Dallas to go see him. And on the way, my mom got the soundtrack. And we were like, let's listen to it, because none of us knew anything about the show. So we're like, okay, let's get a little familiar with it before we see the show. And so then we listened to the soundtrack and immediately fell in love with the show, because it's very charming and very funny, and the soundtrack does a really nice job of capturing the kind of feel of the show. The cast recording has a lot of like the monologues from Man in Chair that are included in them that are just very funny. So we got there, and my uncle was playing Man in Chair, and we sat down in the theater, and you know, the lights go down for the show to start. And the lights are down for a few seconds. And I'm like, what's going on? Because this isn't in the cast recording. At the very beginning of the show, I'm like, I thought I know how it starts, but this isn't it. And the lights are down. And it says, from the darkness, there's I Hate Theater, which was great. And everybody laughed. And I was like, oh, I'm going to love this show. And I did. I had a great time. Really fell in love with the show. I love kind of satire and meta humor and stuff like that, and this show is just seeped in it. It is entirely satirical and it's a show within a show itself, so there's plenty of meta humor going on both within the show and from the show. And then I was really fortunate enough in college, they ended up doing it my senior year, and I got to play Man in Chair then, which was fantastic, because it was one of my dream roles ever since I'd seen it. So I saw they were doing it. I was like, oh, I have to. I don't care. Like, I'll do whatever. If I'm a stagehand and I'm just watching it or every night, like, that would be fine, as long as I'm a part of it some way. But then I got Man in Chair, and it was really great because it's the most fun in my mind for the show. And it was what my uncle had done. And so he came and saw it, and when he came and saw it, he brought the opening, one of the opening night gifts that he'd gotten when we went to go see it was a stuffed monkey with a tailored, like, suit coat that had long sleeves that dragged on the floor, and it was given to him with, like, a pedestal and a little cup and stuff. And so he brought that and gave it to then me as my opening night gift for the show, so he kind of passed the monkey on.
Wow.
And it was really sweet. It was a nice gesture. I appreciated it a lot. And it's to this day one of my favorite shows I've ever done. It's just so much fun.
That is adorable, first of all. That's such a great story and history with the show. Because it's like sort of like you've hit all of
the categories of why people love a show. It's the music, it's the comedy, it's the personal attachment to it, even like through your childhood and through your family. And I know that you also do a lot of comedy, and this is definitely your world.
I'm definitely more of a comedian than I am a theater. I mean, I've done acting because, you know, when you're growing up, there's theater, but there's not like comedy. That's not a thing for that kids do per se. And so, like, you know, I've done musicals, I've done stage shows, but comedy is really where I like to live. And this show is just it's so steeped in comedy. I feel like there's a laugh every minute, at least.
Yeah, this was, so I had never listened to the show before. I've heard of it, and but it was like, it's in that like early 2000s era of musicals that I really don't know.
Yeah.
And so this is the first time I listened to it is after you chose it, and I had a lot of fun, especially because I quite recently watched a movie musical from the 1930s called The Gold Diggers of 1933.
Okay, I don't know that movie, but perfect era to watch to then listen to this.
Yeah, so I was like, all right, I see what's going on here.
Right. Well, and it's what I love about this musical is that it really is it's a great musical for it's a comedian's comedy, and it's a theater person's musical, because it is so kind of self-reflexive and satirical of that golden age of Broadway, that if you know it and you love it and you like grew up listening to Rodgers and Hammerstein or Gilbert and Sullivan, you're going to listen to this musical and immediately know exactly what they're talking about, and you're going to see all of those archetypes come into play and then get turned on their head and kind of made fun of a little bit. But it's always done from this place of love, which I think is a really important thing about what this musical does well, is that you can tell that they're making fun of musicals, but it's because they love musicals so much. And they go, well, okay, well, let's take a look at kind of the history of where musicals come from and where they are now and what we love about them and what we kind of are a little bit not so proud of, and just make fun of it all and have a good time doing it.
Yeah, there is nothing that Broadway producers love more than shows about Broadway. Just the number of musicals out there that are about, like, people in show business, or there are these meta-narratives, like Drowsy Chaperone, like, people just love talking about themselves.
Oh, it's real. It's incredible. And that's, I think, one of my favorite facts about this musical that I think is so fun, is that when it was written originally, it was by a group of friends for their friend's bachelor party. He was getting married. It was Bob Martin was getting married to Janet Vandegraaff, his real-life wife, who is of that name. So they wrote this musical, sans Man and Chair. Man and Chair was not originally a part of it, and they wrote it for him and kind of performed it for him for his bachelor party. I mean, performed. I'm sure they were sitting around with scripts at a table drinking and laughing and doing it. And But it's so fun because it is that – it's that loving – prodding at.
I didn't know that was where it specifically came from, and that makes a lot of sense, especially when you look at the people who sort of wrote it. There's a large creative team. They've got four people listed, two for music and lyrics, two for book, which is kind of unusual. And these people are, like, they're all in show business and have done various things and acting and writing, whatever, but, like, they're all clearly just, like, comedians and friends, and they're not, like, serious, like, Broadway composers
isn't,
and everything.
Like, a producer has put together a team of elites from the industry. It's no, they already knew each other, and they wrote this for their friend, and he went, this is really funny. Do you mind if I add this other character, and we try and put it up as a show? And they did, and it went, and it was great, and people loved it. And I say people loved it. It's an oddly slept on musical, I will say.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people have either not heard of it or never seen it, or they've heard of it, but they haven't listened to it, and they don't really know what it's about, which is really ironic to me because it did really well when it was on Broadway. I mean, it wasn't the longest run, but it got Tony Awards. It was very critically acclaimed, although that probably does come for it. It's a show for Broadway producers and Broadway people, so they see it, and all the people making the choices on these awards are like, I know this. This show is about me. Yes, win the award.
Interesting, I think that, like, it did run for a decent amount of time, but it wasn't like a smash hit or anything.
Yeah, which I really encourage you to watch it. And if you can find the original Broadway recording with Sutton Foster in it, I mean, it's fantastic. And Bob Martin, who it was written for and also wrote the role of Man in Chair and added it to the show, originates Man in Chair as well. So it's and they both do just a fantastic job. And I mean, I think one of the things about Man in Chair's character that really makes him pop and really makes it so entertaining for the show is how much love and tenderness and care he brings to the drowsy chaperone that's the show within the show, the drowsy chaperone, we should establish some way to create a distinction between them. There's the drowsy chaperone, the musical that exists in our world, and the drowsy chaperone that exists in Man in Chair's world that was released in 1928 and has the starring cast of I can't remember the characters' names, because all the characters in the show have fictional actors and actresses that played them that he talks about their personal life with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. It's some of my favorite moments are watching them create this character of the actor that contrasts with the character in the show, and getting to play with that kind of convention is so much fun. I think my favorite is when they do it with Adolfo, because right before his big number, they talk about how the actor that played him, like, OD'd in his apartment and his poodles ate him.
What?
I mean, this isn't in real life, but in the show, the actor, air quotes, you guys can't see, I'm doing air quotes, the actor that played Adolfo, Roman Bartelli, something like that? Sure, Roman Bartelli, the actor that plays Adolfo was eaten alive, not alive, was OD'd in his apartment and was eaten by his poodles, and then a couple minutes later into the scene, the song's about to start, and Man in Chair goes, I love this song, but try not to think of the poodles when you're listening to this. And it's just, and then he sings like a seduction song. So it's so fun because you've got this character singing a song about seduction that in its own right is very funny song and very funny moment. But on top of that, you've got this reality that they've created where, oh yeah, by the way, that guy OD'd and was eaten by poodles.
Oh my God, that's not on the cast recording that I listened to.
It's not. That's what I'm saying. A lot of some of these golden moments in the show are not in the cast recording. So while the cast recording, it really does. As far as listening through the cast recording, you do get most of the show because it is really close to being an opera, with the exception of Man in Chair's like monologues, which some of them are in the cast recording, but the ones that aren't. Are some of the best moments, I think. This show is just so full of one-liners. I know later you're going to ask me what my favorite line was, and I went through and tried to write some of my favorite, and I ended up with like 2 pages. I was like,
oh my
okay,
God.
Well, great.
Just read the whole thing.
Right. I mean, no, I won't do that.
Kind of the whole history of the musical, the American musicals, is people trying to like push boundaries further and further, and this idea that like every sort of trend in American musical theater has to be like edgier than the wave that came before it. And I think that creates amazing, important art. But I don't think that it is the requirement for all things.
Definitely. Definitely. And what I will say is I think this musical does a really good job of kind of calling out Broadway's stumbling blocks throughout mm-hmm. the past. And calling attention to it and starting a dialogue in a way that I think it's ahead of its time. It precedes this kind of conversation that we're happening now in the world. It is very much a woke musical in a time where being woke was not such a phenomenon. And so there are times when it has satire about race and calling out. Calling out kind of the way that Broadway has appropriated like black culture happens at one point. They have the song Cold Feet, and in it, and this is, it's so funny to me because almost every actor I've seen play this, it gets very uncomfortable with this line, and it's because it's the middle of Cold Feet, and George, the best man, comes in, and Robert's dancing a tap number and singing the song, and he comes in halfway through the song. And he's like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And he goes, "I'm singing a song an old Negro taught me." And yeah, it was exactly that face is kind of, you know, every actor that plays that goes, "Oh, I have to say what in front of an audience? They're gonna think I'm racist." Like, that's what a racist thing to say. And it's like, okay, well, yes, but also, so much of Broadway is, like, especially that 1920 golden era of Broadway is, oh, yeah, we stole this old Negro spiritual and put it in the show with different words, and now it's ours, and we own it. Mm-hmm. And so there are moments like that where it's, you know, it pushes that boundary a little bit where it's like, was that just racist? And I think the show is self-aware of what it's saying, and it is firmly satirical enough that it's making its point well. I really think it does a good job of making that point. Although I do understand where people would come from if they think it's too much. I have my privilege that allows me to see it and go, that was good, that was funny. And maybe it's not for other people. But I really think they do a good job of saying, yeah, look, Broadway's not perfect. Let's mm-hmm. look at how. Ooh, that wasn't good.
Yeah.
But it's part of our history.
It's a very interesting line between what you're talking about of, like, clearly loving theater and coming from that place of loving it, and also just continually throughout the show pointing out these things that are not good, especially yeah. about race. My favorite, like, obvious standout example of this right. is when there's a point in the show where he's like, okay, we're going to go to Act Two, and he goes to change the record, and he accidentally puts on this show that is just complete, like, Orientalist,
oh,
horrible,
yeah.
which is a thing that happens continuously throughout right. Broadway's history.
I think it's called, like, The Emperor and the Nightingale, and it's just a really, it's The King and I, basically. It's,
yeah.
it's like, hey, remember how racist The King and I was, and we didn't care or realize? And it's like, oh, wow, yeah, no, good. I mean, and they hyperbolize, for sure, and I'm not trying to poo-poo The King and I, because it's a very enjoyable musical that is a product of its time, sure.
Except it got revived like 3 years ago.
Maybe not. Maybe not the time for that. but, you know, I'm obviously not a Broadway producer, so not making those calls.
Yeah, this is when I came across this part, it was very funny to me, because earlier today, this is pulling back the curtain on this because these episodes are not going to come out on the same day. But earlier today, I recorded an episode about Pacific Overtures.
Okay, yeah.
And so we had a really in-depth conversation about, like, Broadway's history of white men writing stories about Asian people, and just, like, it's a lot. And I just found it so funny that is the specific thing that they pulled out and made a big thing, because it is so prevalent.
It is. And it's, I feel like they do a really, it's such a shocking moment when it happens in the show, because it is so unexpected. You know, you see the show, and it's either done traditionally where there's no intermission, and so they do the show within the show has its act one break, and he goes, great, that was act one. This is where the intermission would be if there was one, but we're not at a theater, so let's keep going. And he puts it on, and it starts. Or a lot of theaters will put an intermission there, and he goes, this is the intermission, I'll see you for act two. And then act two just starts with that, and it is stereotype for sure, 100%, that the bad, like, Asian stereotype that you see in a lot of old movies and theaters, old movies and musicals and theater, and that is the you know, the L's are R's, and they it's rice and wontons, literally. But they do it in such a self-aware and heightened way that you're laughing at how we ever found that to be okay. You're like, oh, man, we really did just generalize and stereotype, and we're fine with it. We were like, yeah, it's a musical. This is fine. I do think it is surprisingly progressive in that way, and it's definitely in a way that I feel like is very clear, but I am used to satire and comedy, and a lot of people I know have not felt like it was as clear, and so, you know, maybe the show is controversial because of that.
That sort of is like the age-old problem with satire is it's like if you can't immediately pick up that it's satire, is it satire or is it just what it's trying to
make
fun
of? And good satire, you should be able to know it's satire. And I would say just because of this show, how deeply steeped in comedy and satire it is, that it should be very obvious. But it's something that makes people very uncomfortable. We don't want to talk about it a lot of times. You don't want to talk about racism or race because then you'll have to own up to being racist at different points in your life. And it's like nobody wants to own their privilege right now.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Didn't know that. Who would have thought we would be talking about that in a podcast about the Drowsy Chaperone?
Like I said, that's just the mode I'm in today. I also find it very funny in particular that they take out this moment to like call out Orientalism on the Broadway stages when Sutton Foster is the star of the show, who's famous from Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Right.
That's all.
Yeah. No, it's real. Although I gotta say, I feel like Sutton Foster is really kind of the perfect casting for Janet.
She
kills it. And she is that young ingenue who had a fabulous career, and that's what Janet is. So she slips into that role so well.
On the topic of Sutton Foster, though, just in general of her being amazing in this role, because she is an extraordinary actress.
She is.
It's also the song Show Off, which is very funny. I was listening to the soundtrack, and I definitely have heard that song before.
Everyone does it as like their audition song,
mm-hmm.
like out of high school. They're like, oh, I've got to audition for colleges. I know what song will really show me off. I don't want to show off, which, again, that great Drowsy Chaperone satire of the song called I Don't Want to Show Off is the biggest show-stopping show-off number.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. Anyway, sorry.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's so fun. I think it's really a standout song from the soundtrack. And like it was the one I liked the most listening to it because I could also, even though I wasn't watching it, I could visualize it so well, which is partially because like I am familiar with Sutton Foster and everything. But I just had a lot of fun. It was less like just very funny to me, like as someone who knows a lot of musicals and I spent a lot of time like watching musical theater stuff. And I was like, wow. I would have never been able to, like, pull this song or, like, describe this song or what it was if you had just said the name of it to me. But as soon as I started listening to it, I was like, I've heard this 100 times before.
Right. Which I think is one of the things that this show does so well is that each of its songs, every song on the soundtrack, is a type of song you have heard 100 times in Broadway. There's As We Stumble Along is you've heard that song so many times. You just don't know it. Like the Bride's Lament is the same way. I mean, it's even just called the Bride's Lament because it's that lamenting number of a musical that you've heard 200 times. And the way that they do that and make it so recognizable, but then yet still surprise you with how they make it funny and the way that they put it on its head, I think is so powerful. It's what makes it so funny. It's what makes this musical so great.
I also really love the opening song of all the characters introducing themselves.
Yes.
Because I was reading the Wikipedia page as I was listening to get a sense of it.
Right.
And I was reading the page and I was like, oh, God. But then listening to it is so much easier to understand as you get them one at a time coming in. And you're like, oh, I get it. I get it.
We're pastry chefs. No fakery. A bakery is what we got. Adolfo, Adolfo. My name it is Adolfo. I am the king of romance. So I kiss a lot.
You are the king of romance, so you kiss a lot. Wedding bells will ring, wedding bells will chime, wedding bells will celebrate.
Oh, it's so good. It just, they're like, okay, top of the show, we got to get the audience introduced to characters. Here's a big opening number where the characters literally just come center stage and introduce themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my favorite bit of that is when the aviatrix comes on. And she's like, I'm Trix, the aviatrix. I gotta go. I'll see you in Act 2. She's like, I'm leaving. I'm just here for the opening number to introduce myself. I'll see you at the climax.
I'm going to get a drink.
Yeah, right. And I'm sure the actress in that show every time is like, okay, I did my opening number. Time to go sit around for an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And so my part comes back up again.
It's so much fun. It's also, while I was listening to this, I love being able to hear styles of, like, theater makers.
Yeah.
Because I was like, this reminds me of The Prom, because I just listened to that really recently. It's a new show on Broadway this year.
Okay.
And then I was like, oh, okay, yeah, because it's, like, made by the same people, and it's directed by the same person, is like, has some of the same cast members in it even. And I'm like, this is part of – you get these lineages of,
yeah,
of composers and, like, groups of people who make theater together. And I'm like, oh, they're related. That makes sense.
Right, yeah. No, it's definitely – it's such a clear tone that this show has. It's mm-hmm. definitely – its voice is very unique, I think, to – The Drowsy Chaperone. I really just don't know too many other shows that have that self-aware tongue-in-cheek tone.
Yeah.
That this does. It's kind of similar, I mean, and it's just meta self-awareness to, I think, title of show is probably what comes closest to me
mm-hmm.
when I think of it. But it's a little bit different from title of show, just in that I feel like Drowsy Chaperone has less to prove. Does that make sense? I feel like title of show is really trying to be like hip and edgy and look how out here we are with our meta show,
mm-hmm.
which is fine and it's really good. I like title of show. I'm not trying to diss title of show. It's a great musical and it's very entertaining to listen to and watch. But Drowsy Chaperone is, I think, very much more of like, we just love musicals. So we wanted to make the most musical we could. But also, musicals are dumb.
That's partially why it reminded me so much of The Prom, which I think is, like, The Prom is a more earnest show. It's not, but it still has
I'm not familiar with it at all.
I'll give you a little brief overview. I'm sure we'll cover it on this podcast someday. But it's a new musical from this year, and it's about a group of sort of washed up Broadway stars.
Right.
And they are, like, they're not doing super hot right now. One of them is Beth Liebel, who's
okay,
one of
great.
The stars of Drowsy Chaperone. And then they learn about a girl in Indiana, I believe it's Indiana, who wanted to take her girlfriend to the prom, and so her school canceled the prom. And so
okay.
they decide to go out there, and they're going to save the lesbians, and like that's their new thing. That's how they're going to get big again. Now they're all about activism, and like, and so it's a very earnest and sweet show, and it's very like, it's not trying to do something like super innovative or like earth shattering or anything. But it's like this very sweet story, and at the same time has a lot of kind of satire of making fun of theater people and making fun of like drive by activism and those kinds of themes that I think are similar to the kind of stuff in Drowsy Chaperone.
Man, I'm gonna have to check out The Prom now.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I definitely will. That sounds like a lot of fun.
And they have a song that is so much like Show Off. It's also like they're
right that.
The singer being like, I couldn't possibly.
Right. I love that. I love that. Just the like, oh, here's our number for our super talented performer to just show off a little bit. You know, there's
don't worry
one in
it.
Every musical. You know, it's the defying gravity of the Drowsy Chaperone is show off. And it's all about how she doesn't want a big deal made of herself. As she makes the biggest deal of herself. Oh, it's great. It really, it's such a fun musical. I keep saying that, and I keep coming back to that word, just fun. And it, because it's what it is. It's just such a good time. Okay. It was, I loved playing Man in Chair, and it was really easy to get into that mindset of it. Because I love the Drowsy Chaperone in the way that he loves, air quotes, the Drowsy Chaperone.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, like when I remember in it, when we were starting, my director was like, yeah, so I just really like, when I think of the Man in Chair, I think of this genuine love that he has. I was like, oh, no problem. I was like, we're good there.
I'm just going to draw from my own heart, and we are. I don't even have to act.
It wasn't acting. It was just me like taking the lines and being like, this is how excited I am about this show.
Beautiful, genuine performance. That's like a teacher I had once had a joke that you should never put animals on stage because a dog is not pretending to be a dog, and a dog will always be a better actor than you. And
that's like so true.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it's the same kind of thing. It's like you are not pretending to be excited about this musical. You just are.
Oh, not at all. And Stumble Along is the like show stopping number from the Grand Dame of the theater, which in air quotes the drowsy chaperone is the chaperone played by air quotes Beatrice Stockwell, who's very much a Bernadette Peters type. You know, she's been the star of every show she was in since she got cast, and has been in theater ever since, and it just dominates. And she sings this number, Stumble Along, that is so deliciously ridiculous in of its own. But she finishes it, and in the like script, the man in chair is just supposed to, he fawns over Beatrice Stockwell, and so he's just supposed to like go crazy for the performance. And we were, you know, really fortunate to have a great cast when we put it up. I, you know, loved working with all of those people, and so many, many talented people. But the woman that played the drowsy chaperone, Tiara, was so good. It was, she killed that song. It just slayed. I mean, it brought down the house every night. And so the song ends and I'm leaping to my feet, just like clapping, jumping up and down. And it's not even because like that's what the character has to do. It's just, man, that performance deserved it. So, I mean, but that's the nice thing about this show is that it creates those moments so well that you're there with them the whole time. Like the man in the chair says, hey, let me bring you on this trip and show you one of my favorite musicals and show you why it's one of my favorite musicals. And by the time you're done, you're like, yes, I get it. That was so much fun. I had a great time. I see why you love this weird, imperfect, not so great musical. Which is one of the other things that I, you know, now that I've said it, I want to touch on it. The musical within the musical, the air quotes drowsy chaperone, not the real one, but the air quotes drowsy chaperone, is not a good musical. It's very corny and predictable and kind of not stale, but it, you know, it's all the tropes you've seen a bunch of times. So if it was without the meta humor and without some of the jokes that are put in that are self-aware of that, if it was just like that musical that without the man in chair that you picked up that CD and it came as is, we'd be like, why? We wouldn't be talking about it in a podcast, first of all. It would have fallen to the wayside. And it makes it so much more fun to see why the man is excited about it, because his just joy really makes it. He acknowledges. He's like, I know it's not a perfect musical. He's like, I know it's not great. There's a forced monkey motif, and some of the bits are tired. Although, one of the bits he talks about, there's a scene that's a spit take scene. And you won't know this from having listened to the soundtrack. But there's a spit take scene that happens in the show where a character goes through, like, gets spat on, like, four or five times in a row. It just repeats the same joke.
Oh, no.
That leads to him getting a drink spat on him. And it's great. It's so funny. And the man has a moment where he's like, isn't it amazing what actors used to have to go through getting spat on eight times a night, as the character playing the butler is really getting spat on in the show eight times. Oh, it's great. I love it. But it's not the drowsy chaperone, with air quotes, is not a good musical. Mm-hmm. But it's just because the man in chair has this attachment to it and this affinity for it, where he wants it to be so good, so it is.
And there's something so deeply relatable about that, because I think that, I mean, as I like musical theater fans, but also just like anyone in general, you always love things that are not good. Like, everybody has movies and books or whatever that they just love deeply for whatever reason, no matter what, even if that thing is not like a masterpiece of cinema or whatever.
Right, right.
And then it's always people always want to like crap on stuff that other people enjoy, and here's the show that's saying like, I just love this thing so much and I'm gonna share it with literally hundreds of people a night, and you're all just going to come and enjoy this thing with me. And even just existing on that level, it just brings a smile to your face.
It does, and it works. He gets you on board, you know? I don't think anybody would crap on – I hope. I love it, so I really hope. But I don't think anybody would, like, dismiss The Drowsy Chaperone after having seen it, like, as like, oh, that wasn't good. I mean, I feel like everybody that sees it walks away having had a great time. I personally just don't – I don't know anybody that's seen the show that was like, I didn't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's because all of my friends are theater people and comedians, and it's really a show made for them. But even the people that aren't – they're just your average layperson on the street, I think, you know, whether you've got that background and that knowledge of musicals and theater so that those – digs are hitting home and you have the knowledge to go, oh, look at that intertextuality that just happened there. Like, you don't need that to still enjoy it because it is so just chock full of jokes, period, for anyone that I, you know, I love it. I've said that 20 times now in this podcast. I'm going to listen back to this podcast and it's just going to be me going, I love it. It's fun for 40 minutes, but it's the truth.
I think that this show could have a really beautiful marriage with Noises Off, which is.
I'm saying that when I say I have a background in theater, it's like I've done it, but I, you know, I've seen the hits, I've seen some of the bigger shows, and then there are lots of shows that I just haven't seen.
It surprised me that you haven't seen this in particular because it is so up the same alley.
Take notes. The Prom and Noises Off. Okay.
And there's a movie version of it that is very good.
I've heard of it. I mean, you say the name Noises Off, and it's very familiar to me. I'm sure somebody else has probably recommended it in my past, or I've just heard people talk about it.
Yeah. Well, basically it is the story of a play being put on, and I forget the name of the play inside of the play. I'll say inside of the movie because the movie is the version I've seen. And so it goes from rehearsal to rehearsal and productions of it. And so you're seeing the play that's being performed, which is a farce. It's like an open, closed door farce. But you are also seeing them, like the interactions of the actors as they are rehearsing it. And there's like cross relationships and there's fights and and every time they do a run through of the show, it falls apart increasingly much. And they're like destroying each other's lives by the end of it. It is so funny. And it's not quite the same thing, but it has a very similar farce comedy feel, as well as a very similar like meta actors, characters interwoven in this story. And it is, yeah, I think that they would go very well together as like a double feature.
Ooh, definitely. I'm probably watch that tonight when I get home.
Yeah.
I'll just go home and watch Noises Off. That sounds great. That definitely sounds right up my alley. Well, and the play within a play thing. My favorite part of almost any show is when it has a play within a play. Midsummer Night's Dream, my favorite part is watching Pyramus and Thisbe.
Oh my God.
You know, that little wink and a nod of meta humor is so good to me. It's just, mwah, I love it. That was me. I kissed my fingers like a chef. The mwah. That's what that was for you listeners at home.
The man in chair character is so delightful and funny and interesting, and also makes me very sad.
Oh, he's so tragic.
He's so sad.
He's a very sad. He's very sad and hopeful. And a lot of musicals do this thing. A lot of musicals do this thing where characters have character development, which is great, I guess, if you want it. This musical really does this interesting thing where the man in chair, his character arc is never really resolved. I mean, you can make the argument that it is, and you could kind of say it is by the end of the show, and I'll touch on that in a minute. But he's kind of constantly in this state of limbo where he's been going through this issue and running over it in his head again and again and again. And he just hasn't quite figured out the answer. And it's a really tragic character because it's this person who is an agoraphobe and is a shut-in in their apartment, and they're scared of people and they're scared of the outside world. So all they do is they sit inside and listen to old musicals. and he's got this really like broken sadness to him that his one escape is this world of musicals. So the love and the joy that he brings when he talks about the musicals is so apparent and so tangible, because it is everything he is as a character, is just loving musicals and sharing them with anyone who will listen, which in this case is the audience. But his whole deal is whether or not he has this moment toward the end where he's trying to figure out whether the drowsy chaperone says, live while you can or leave while you can. And he obsesses over that moment because in the air quotes cast recording of the air quotes drowsy chaperone, there's a cane that gets dropped over that line. And so he's like, I can't hear what she says. And he plays it over and over again for the audience, and it does a fun physical bit where the actors reset and drop the cane every time. And it's a lot of fun. It's a funny moment, but it's also very heartbreaking because it's a man who has obsessed his whole life about whether he should just live his life or give up. And he still hasn't picked when we join him for this journey of this musical. It's very much him still in limbo. And I would argue that he does kind of pick by the end, because in the very end they do the reprise of I Do Up in the Sky, where all the characters come to life and but interact with him for the first time in the show, because he's always on stage, but he's very much a ghostly figure. Like, they can't see him, they can't touch him, they don't interact with him. But in this last song, they do finally acknowledge him and interact with him, and he climbs aboard the plane and flies off into the sun. I guess spoilers.
That's fine.
He flies off into the sunset, and it's him finally choosing to live, I think, rather like to take control of his life and actively pursue it, rather than just passively sit and let his sadness wash over him and wallow in it and reminisce of better times and different faraway places that these musicals take him to. It's very much escapism, but it's interesting because it's not a big growth. It's not a lot of change that happens over the musical, but it does such a good job of kind of slowly revealing that pain and that background that he has to you throughout it, because it starts very much as just, hi, I'm this guy, let me show you one of my favorite musicals. And then, oh, you find out that his parents got divorced and he got this musical soundtrack right before it happened, and so he kind of associates this with his parents being together and a happier time in his life. And then you find out that he was married and his wife left him, and it was all really hard for him and confusing. And there's one of my favorite lines and bit moments is when he reveals that he was married, and the character itself is often played very effeminate, and because it's all about a guy who doesn't leave his apartment and drinks tea and watches musicals, the audience very often makes the assumption that he's gay. And he has this moment where he's like, oh, back when I was married, he was like, ah, surprised you, didn't I? You didn't think you were taking this a different direction. He goes, yeah, that shows you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, kind of. That's not the actual words he uses, but it's a nice moment, because that's what that show does really well, is it knows what your expectations are going to be, and it subverts them, or exaggerates. Mm. Or it exaggerates them, and it makes it just so fun.
I think the whole character also presents, like, and I will preface this by saying I don't necessarily think it's that deep.
You don't think it's that deep?
No. But with going back, you're so offended.
It sounded like you were going to be like, yeah, everything you just said, I don't agree with. I think it's bull shark.
I'm about to float a theory that I think might be going a little bit much. But
no, let's hear it. I'm excited.
Well, we were talking about how much Broadway loves meta commentary, and like this character who loves musicals so much is like being presented to an audience that loves musicals so much.
Right.
And it's almost like a reminder of like, stop navel gazing, and like sort of the parallels of not someone being afraid to live their life and finds this escapism, versus like someone that's finding escapism, especially in shows that are like just about theater and things that they already know and enjoy, right, and like not going outside their comfort zone. I like that.
Ooh, I like that a lot. You say that wasn't that deep. I think that's very poignant to this show.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that was necessarily the intention, because I do think that like just taking that character's arc like in like the context of the show,
right,
it has like a full and interesting arc that doesn't require like a meta commentary to make it fully realized.
Right.
But I do think that's a potential interpretation of another level.
Well, I think it's interesting too, because that is very, that goes along well with Janet Vandegraaff, the character in the show, not the woman whose marriage the show was written for. But the character of Janet Vandegraaff in the show is choosing to leave theater, the only world she's ever known and been very successful in, and decides to leave it for love and to live life. And I think that plays in really well with that point you made, because it's very much is that. It's like, oh, you could spend your whole life in this echo chamber of what, where your comfort zone is, or you could do something a little scary and choose to live, which I think is, if this show could be said to have a message, I think that would be it.
Mm-hmm.
I say that because this is one of those shows where the man in chair says it outright. He's like, the plot is simple and the characters are two-dimensional, but it's just fun. It is very close to pure escapism, because it, you know, we're talking about these heavier themes, but they're not things that you're actively thinking about when you're watching the show. It's not a show that is intended to make you sit here and question your life choices when you're watching it. It is very much a bubblegum, like, delicious, just sit here and enjoy it and chew on it for a little while kind of show.
Mm-hmm.
I think. I mean, but I also, for me, that's enough. I love it. I think it's incredibly entertaining. And I think there's something to be said for art that is just entertaining. And I think the show is that. It does it well. It's such solid writing from a comedy standpoint, because it does such a good job of managing the audience's expectations and leading them and building them up and subverting them and taking them down and playing them out. And, you know, and it, I love it. I love it. It's a very well-written show. So kudos to the five people that wrote it.
Congratulations. You did good. All right. Well, that brings us to our lightning round.
Lightning round. Let's do it.
So, starting off, what is your favorite song?
I'm going to say Stumble Along is my favorite song. It's such a powerful song, and it's funny, and it hits that emotion really well. But, you know, honorable mentions to I Am Aldolfo, which is hilarious. Bride's Lament, which, again, is just such a silly, ridiculous concept within the show that they just treat completely seriously and execute beautifully. And then Accident Waiting to Happen, which is that roller skate song. That one's up there too. Like those are my top four. But final answer, Stumble Along.
All right.
If only for Tiara's performance of it, which seeing it live 3 feet away from me was stunning. She did such a good job.
So I know you've said you've had a lot of lines written down for your favorite.
Oh my goodness.
But okay. If you had to maybe pick a couple.
I'll give my top two. So at the very beginning of the show, it starts in darkness, and then the lights come up after the man in chair has been talking about how much he loves or what theater used to be like and how it would transport you and is this magical event. And then the lights come up, and he just goes, oh, how things have changed. And it's the first time you see him, and so it's just this great reveal of like, oh, we're all here together, and this is just an apartment, is the set, and it's just me, a regular man, sitting in a chair. Oh, how things have changed. It's such a good, just juicy nugget of that satire, and it is really so endemic of the show that is to come. It sets the tone so well, that whole opening monologue does, and I love it. And then this one, my runner-up, I'll give, it's an Aldolfo line toward the end of the show where they're panicking to find a way to get all these lovers married because they forgot a minister. And Trix the Aviatrix shows up with her plane, and they're like, oh, wait a minute, a plane, a captain of a ship can perform a marriage. A pilot is comparable to a captain, and they're going down this line of thought, and Adolfo goes, yes, and a plane is a kind of a ship. And they're like, what? And he's like, you know, an airship, a ship of the sky. And they go, oh, ship, yes, all in unison. And just that interaction of him having the accent that makes them not able to understand ship, even though it's what they were talking about and building to as a group anyway. And then just the unison, everybody finally, it clicks. It's so good. It's so funny. Great moment. 10 out of 10. BuzzFeed, yes. See, I didn't say I love it. I didn't say I loved it.
10 out of 10.
10 out of
Buzz
10.
Feed.
BuzzFeed, yes.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
All right. Who's your favorite character?
Man in Chair. I feel like that's obvious now, since you've listened to this whole podcast. But it really is. He's so sweet and imperfect and good and hopeful and the connection with my uncle and having gotten to play it myself. He's my favorite. My second favorite, which I'll throw to you because it's a little bit less expected, is Underling, the butler.
Hmm.
It's such a fun, dry, straight man like part, but it's just so funny, and he's not in it like crazy, but when he is, it's gold. It's moi. It's BuzzFeed 10.
Now my normal question is who would you want to play in the show? And you've already done this,
right?
So you had to play another character. Who would you play?
Okay, if I got to play another character, there are two I would love to play but would never get cast as, and those are Adolfo. Just I'm not ethnic in any way. You know, it would be really offensive to cast me as Adolfo, and I hope a director never would. But I would love to do it if in some parallel world I could get away with that accent. Being the drowsy chaperone. She's so fabulous. What a great part. That would be so much fun to play. I don't have the range to do it at all, but it would be so much fun.
I like to imagine you mean the range and like any definition you can think of.
Oh yeah, no, my arm range. I don't know what that is. Wingspan, reach, those are both actual words for it, not arm range.
Sure.
Great.
Who would you recommend go see this show?
Besides everyone? Like I said, it's a real comedian's comedy, and it's a real theater person's musical. If you're a fan of musicals, especially that golden era of Broadway, if you're a big fan of like Rodgers and Hammerstein, kind of, you know, that era of Broadway and musicals, or even current ones, because they are all built on the same history, the same tropes. You still recognize them. They still exist in modern musicals. So if you're a fans of musicals, especially should, comedy, if you're a big comedy person, but you're not really into musicals like that, it'll be a lot of fun for you because it's making fun of musicals. So you can sympathize with that. You can go like, it's so true. Musicals do always do that. So, I would say it's perfect for people who love or hate musicals.
Great. Perfect. And finally, if you could combine this with another show, what would you pick?
All right. So when I originally was thinking about this, the show I picked was title of show, just because I wanted to see what would happen if you took a show that was already super meta and then another show that was extremely meta and just shove them together and probably create a black hole. But I thought it'd be interesting. But since you've told me about Noises Off, and I am listening to you describe that show and the way that works, I'm gonna pick that one because I would love to see the man in chair commenting on the actors also playing the characters, because he does a little bit anyway. But there's never a point within the show that the actors are, or the characters are the actors and not just the characters. Like you never see Beatrice Stockwell, you only see the chaperone. But it would be so interesting to watch him watch Beatrice as Beatrice interact with the other actors and have opinions and commentary on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think would be so interesting, especially because he idolizes so many of them so much and does know a lot of, like, factual things about their history. But it's one of those, you know, never meet your heroes thing,
mm-hmm.
where I wonder how he would feel if he got to see them being themselves as imperfect human beings. That would be so interesting. So I'm going to say noises off, final answer.
That is a very interesting way to think about that. I think that sounds awesome. I would love to see that as well. Or even, like, and putting... On the flip side, putting, like, a future narrator on, like, Noises Off would be very interesting,
right?
As well. Which Noises Off in itself does kind of have a narrator in the director, but he's, like, very much in it. Whereas having maybe, like, an audience member who's, like,
yeah, right.
Here?
Somebody completely removed from it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And I hope everyone goes and listens to Drowsy Chaperone.
Or
watches it. Or yeah, or else I will set my poodles on you and they'll eat you.
Thank you all for listening, everybody. Thank you for listening to this episode of Corner of the Sky. You can find us online at theincomparable.com/COTS or follow us on Twitter at @COTSPodcast. If you would like, you could also review us on Apple Podcasts or recommend us at Overcast. See you next week. I feel like you're running out of ways to talk about how much you like this show.
I'm trying to keep it fresh because I know I just keep saying how much I love it, and it's fun.